The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. Hello, this is Jim Cronin from the North Carolina Reading Service. For the next hour, I shall be reading to you from the Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Health section. Do you kiss your dog? Find out how gross your customer habits really are, according to health experts. I admit it. When it comes to food, I have some EU-inducing practices, like skimming mold off old cheddar and feeding the rest of my unsuspecting family. We're still alive. So how bad can it be? Because our gross human habits fall somewhere along the spectrum from mildly cringeworthy to full-on repulsive, I reached out to experts to find out where some common behaviors land in the grossometer. The stamped expiration date can eating old food. The stamped expiration date and its confusing cousin used by and best before should be but one tool in your should I eat this meal box. But the exception of infant formula food labels aren't standardized or regulated, says nutritionist Marie Spiker, an assistant professor at the University of Washington. Few are related to biology or food safety, just peak freshness. And so, she says, it's totally fine and safe to eat foods that are not at their exact peak. Handling, packaging, refrigeration, and storage all affect any food's farm-to-plate timeline. So your best tools are your eyes and your nose. Most of the time, this is intuitive, says Spiker. If it looks good and smells good, it's probably good. Not sure? Consider this. Spores spread throughout soft, porous surfaces. So in general, hard foods are more difficult to permeate and therefore safer to eat, she says. Don't trust your sense of smell or sight? Check out the FDA's website where food safety guidelines are available. So you probably should toss the whole package if you spot mold on bread, soft cheeses like brie and feta, or soft produce such as strawberries. But if it's not too gross to slice off the funky stuff and save the rest of the potatoes, cured meat like salami, and hard cheeses like my beloved cheddar. Borrowing a toothbrush. Most of us would never use a stranger's toothbrush for two good reasons. One, we have no idea what illness or germs that person harbors. Two, it's disgusting. But that's surely not the same as borrowing your partner's in a pinch, right? After all, we swap kisses. Well, your mouth is not a sterile place, and it's full of bacteria unique to you, says Matthew Mesita, DDS, clinic director at Ohio State Upper Arlington Dentistry in Columbus. The whole reason we brush and floss is to collect and remove live bacteria. It's often from spots that lips don't touch. Cold, the flu, or even herpes can easily pass along on a toothbrush, especially if you have gingivitis or bloody gums. Using your partner's toothbrush means you're transferring those germs into your mouth, which can disrupt your own mouth's delicate balance bacteria. Of course, you've lived with someone long enough, chances are your family group already shares some bacterial commonality, says Messina. But it's best to play it safe. If you find yourself on vacation without a toothbrush, just gargle with mouthwash or water. And he adds, when you're traveling, remember, unless you're on safari, toothbrushes are readily available. Just call the front desk. Kissing your dog. Pet owners are shameless when it comes to showering their fur babies with affection. A recent survey revealed that 61% of dog owners admit to kissing their dogs on the mouth. All this despite the possibility of zoonotic animal-to-human diseases, including pasteurella, which can result in skin inflammation and joint infections, salmonella, stomach cramps and fever, and E. coli, diarrhea, bloodstream infections. That said, the risk of sop passing you a parasite or anything else is very low, except when it isn't. If you're young, old, pregnant, or immunocompromised, you have acne or psoriasis or easily infected open wound, I'd avoid being licked on the face, advises veterinarian Scott Weiss, chief of infection control at Ontario Veterinary College. Even the healthy should pick their pecs wisely. Keep this in mind before planting a wet one on your dog. Everything they've licked, everything, may end up inside of you. That said, there's a cost-benefit analysis to be made, said Weiss. For lots of people, kissing is a part of bonding with their pet. If that's you and the risk it worth it, that's fine. Sipping from unwashed water bottles. It's highly likely that buried in a gym bag or forgotten in a car trunk is a reusable water bottle that's been rinsed rarely and barely, but never properly scrubbed. So what? It's just water, right? Wrong. It's a bunch of other things now, too. The inside of your body is like a dirty aquarium. It's covered in biofilms, clusters of viable microorganisms growing from your mouth's backwash flora, explains Peter C. Iwin, professor at the University of Nebraska's Department of Pathology, Microbiology, and Immunology. A small consolation. Your own flora doesn't necessarily hurt you. What can hurt you, however, is any foreign bacteria. Maybe use a dirty barbell, wipe sweat off your lips, and take a drink. That can sneak into the bottle and multiply. A water bottle sitting a few hours in a warm car makes a nice petri dish for bacteria to thrive. And in just water, there are plenty of nutrients from your backwash saliva for slimy biofilm to feast upon. A simple wash doesn't clean this out. That's because your bottle has a ton of microscopic crevices for bacteria to hide and grow into mold, which can cause diarrhea, vomiting, or allergy symptoms. Porous plastic bottles are the most hospitable to bacteria. So opt for glass or stainless steel instead. But whatever you're drinking from, try to wash it every few days with dish soap, or better yet, one part vinegar and three parts of water. Skipping the soap. Most of us tend to be fastidious when washing our hands in a public washroom. But at home, why bother with all that scrubbing? After all, germs in your bathroom likely to belong to you anyway, and you're right to a point. Your immune system is trained to recognize your own microbes and get rid of the rest, says Shannon Manning, associate professor of microbiology and molecular genetics at Michigan State University. But consider that a flush toilet, when left open, expels invisible particles into the air at more than 6 feet per second. Just assume you're going to get covered with some in that spray. If you pick up a pathogen, an organism causing disease, on your hands and then, say, bite your nails or eat a sandwich, you can ingest the pathogen, says Manning. And should that happen, and you get sick, even microbes you already harbor can balloon if your immune system is busy fighting something else. Hence, the necessity of a good wash, preferably with antimicrobial soap. A simple flash of water is not only insufficient, but might be worse than not washing at all, says Manning, since foreign germs are more likely to stick to wet hands. Tinkling in the shower. Relief for secret shower tinklers. Peeing while you're in there is actually pretty natural. Warm running water from the shower stimulates the bladder to want to contract, says Lori Lerner, associate professor and chief of urology at Boston University's Chobanian and Avedisian School of Medicine. A sudden spasm can force urine from the bladder, and quickly there's no need to fight the inevitable. In most cases, urine is sterile. It's just electrolytes from your own body, and it's going right down the drain, Dr. Lerner says. But what if you're swimming in a public pool? Yes, other people's pool is pretty gay. Gag-worthy, though. Though, again, it's not quite as bad as it sounds. Urine in a pool is very, very, very diluted with tons of chlorine for this exact reason, says Dr. Lerner. Human bodies are leaky, and while technically any body fluid could contain disease-causing bacteria, if the risk of pool pee were anything but minuscule, you'd read about thousands upon thousands of infections daily. Far worse than a chemical-treated pool, asks Dr. Lerner, is a lake filled with fish waste and bacteria. But thanks to nice scenery and nature's good PR, nobody frets about that. And last, but certainly not least, pimple popping. Are you hooked on popping zits? Come on, we're all friends here. After all, whether you're doing it out of boredom or vanity, or for the dopamine hit, gross but true, your brain rewards this bad habit with a flood of happy hormones, you're not alone. The proof. The TV show Dr. Pimple Popper and the endless TikTok videos. But before your face ends up resembling an exploded minefield, Idaho-based board-certified dermatologist Dustin Portella wants you to remember this. A pop pimple is basically an open wound where bacteria can sneak in and cause a highly contagious skin infection, like impetigo, or a yeast-based fungus, like candida. Dr. Portella has seen pop pimples snowball into painful infected abscesses requiring antibiotics and surgical drainage. But good news, the likelihood of this is low. So if you can't keep your fingers off your face, Dr. Portella says you scrub up like a surgeon. It takes 2 to 5 minutes to carefully scrub the hands and forearms with antimicrobial soap, according to the National Institute for Health. Even then, Dr. Portella warns, infections still happen. That's why I suggest you don a pair of latex gloves, and as soon as you're done, apply a medicated pimple patch to help the picked-at lesion heal more quickly and to keep you from digging at it some more. Because the more you pick, the more likely you'll scar. By the way, I'm recording this on Talk Like a Pirate Day. So if I suddenly break into some kind of pirate-sounding talk, you'll understand, my hearties, you'll understand. Okay, we've done the fun stuff. Let's start with the more serious stuff. Here's why you should delete your old online accounts, STAT. Remember that old Hotmail account you had back in the day? The internet does, and it can put your personal information at risk. More is definitely better when it comes to certain things. Job offers, binge-worthy Netflix series, chocolate. But the same cannot be said about passwords. In fact, the more logins you have, the greater the security risk. Alarmingly, the average American now has a whopping 168 passwords, according to a recent survey from password management company NordPass, and that number is up 70% compared with just 3 years ago. If you can't possibly believe you have that many passwords, let us take you on a trip down memory lane to your very first Hotmail account, the wedding site you created for the big day, and your Tumblr account, for starters. While you may have forgotten about these abandoned accounts, cyber criminals have not. Your forgotten online accounts may seem harmless, but they're actually a big security liability, says Wes Guerrier, an executive director for IBM Security. Ahead, we'll walk you through what to do with your old accounts and provide some important tech tips that will help you protect the ones you keep. Why does having so many logins put you at risk? Each one is a potential target for hackers seeking sensitive information stored within, like your credit card or bank account number, says Guerrier. Even if your account doesn't have sensitive data tied to it, it's still a liability, as many people reuse passwords across accounts, allowing hackers to swipe the password from one and gain access to another, like the one with your bank account. In fact, for the second year in a row, IBM's Cost of a Data Breach report found that compromised credentials were the top way cyber criminals access your data. Each of a user's forgotten or abandoned accounts becomes a potential attack vector at compromising your personal information, Guerrier says. Businesses are reeling from these cyber attacks as well. And if hackers break into one of their systems and get hold of your login information, all your accounts could be compromised. The bottom line, even if you think you're being responsible about online safety, a company's data breach could still put you at risk. Okay, which accounts have you likely forgotten about? Sure, you probably remember that you had or may still have an AOL or Snapfish account. Actually, I have an AOL and a Hotmail account. But there are also logins you used only a handful of times, maybe even just once. Yep, every time you create an account, even for a quickie appointment or a vacation booking, that account stays there forever. Here's a partial list of accounts you probably created over the years. Email, Hotmail, Yahoo, Outlook, Gmail, etc. Social media, school accounts and emails, health sites, hospital, clinics, doctor's offices, and labs, concert and theater tickets, transportation, train, bus, or plane services, travel sites, loyalty plans and rewards cards, online shopping sites. Now we'll see how to find and delete old accounts. If you're no longer using an account, delete it. While there's no set time frame in which you should review your online accounts to decide if you should delete or deactivate them, try doing so at least once a year. The good news is it's easier than you think. Just follow these steps. Look for your login credentials to various online accounts on your computer's web browser. On Chrome, click the three vertical dots at the top right of the screen. Go to Passwords at Autofill. Then select Google Password Manager to see a list of the accounts in the browser stored for you. The process will be similar for other browsers. Check if any of your passwords have shown up in the dark web due to a data breach. You may see a pop-up from Chrome or Microsoft Edge that tells you which passwords you should change. If you don't see a pop-up, that doesn't mean there's not a problem. To check yourself in Chrome, click three vertical dots at the top right of the screen and go to Passwords at Autofill. Then click Google Password Manager and have finally checkup. Alternatively, go to the free and safe website, Have I Been PWND, to see if any of your passwords have been breached. Check your PC or Mac or mobile device's operating system for login credentials to various accounts. Do a search for the password and you should be able to find a password manager called Keychain Access on a Mac. See a list of accounts. From here, you can delete them or change the passwords. If you want to keep them, you may also see installed password manager apps, such as DoorDash, Dashlane, RoboForm, LastPass, 1Password, or Bitwarden here. Log on to each site to review or change your password, or officially deactivate or delete accounts you no longer use. Make sure you've backed up anything you want, such as info and photos, before you do. An important note, don't just uninstall apps from your phone or tablet. This removes the program from your device, but your information will still be on the service it's linked to, such as a site like Hotels.com. You need to go through the steps above to delete your account, or it will remain on the site server indefinitely. For your information, you also want to go through a similar process when deleting apps. Pro tip, if you're using a website or service just one time, consider checking out as a guest rather than creating a permanent account. How to keep your password safe. A good password can make it more difficult for hackers to access your accounts. Reader's Digest reached out to McAfee, a leading cybersecurity company, for some tips to create a strong password and manage them all if you decide to keep an account. Follow the recommended best practices below for setting secure passwords and changing them at least every 90 days. Use a unique password for each account. We know it's more convenient to use the same password for everything or a slight variation of 1Password that's easy to remember. But this also makes it easier for hackers to get to your online accounts. Don't write passwords on a notepad or keep them all in a document on your computer. These are not secure storage solutions. Instead, consider a trustworthy password manager app for all your devices, such as DoorDash, Dashlane, RoboForm, LastPass, 1Password, or Bitwarden. Find one you like best and install it on multiple devices, phone, tablet, laptop, and desktop, so it'll synchronize between them all. Create a strong password. That's mean one that is at least 12 letters long, isn't a common word or sequence of numbers, and has a combination of upper and lowercase letters, numbers, and symbols. Alternatively, McAfee says a passphrase is a good idea, too. Try a lyric for a song or a poem. For example, "And the Rocket's Red Glare." Or make it abbreviation from the words of the sentence, changing the quick brown fox jumped over the lazy dog in the backyard to TQBGFJOTATLIBB, for instance. Also resist using personal information that people who know you or look at your social media can guess, such as your birthday, your kids or pet's name, and so on. Use multi-factor authentication for your important online accounts, like online banking. Logging into an app or website with a two-factor authentication doesn't just require your password, but also a one-time code sent by text or email. Oops, hang on a second, computer just belped. Or ask me to confirm it's really you. If offered, a secondary biometrics option to log in, which uses a part of your body to identify you, such as your fingerprint or face scan, adds another layer of protection. Now, along the same line of security and things, after the most recent data breach, many people are wondering, can you change your Social Security number? Here's what experts say. Thieves are constantly finding new ways to scam people, and the technology is helping these bad actors execute cyber attacks at scale. Just this year, hackers stole customer records from several major companies, AT&T, Ticketmaster, Dell, and Bank of America among them. But the data breach that has America anxiously asking, can you change your Social Security number, happened this April, and it was a doozy. A group of hackers claimed to access about 2.9 billion records stolen from background check company National Public Data. The short story, the Social Security numbers of nearly every American, along with other personal data, may have been stolen. It's unsettling, no doubt. After all, we've been trained to avoid disclosing our Social Security number for fear of identity theft. But the truth is, we have only so much control over our personal data. At this point, you're probably wondering, can I change my Social Security number? We check with cybersecurity and identity theft experts to get some answers and to put your mind at ease. Ahead, they offer their top strategies and advice to consider before trying to change your Social Security number. Yes, you can change your Social Security number. In rare instances, while you might call your credit card company and put a hold on your account and get a new card when you think yours has been compromised, you can't simply get a new Social Security number when you're concerned about a data breach. In fact, despite the risk of a scammer getting hold of the sensitive information, Few people ever change their Social Security numbers. Accurate and up-to-date statistics on the number of Americans who apply or for or successfully change their SSN each year are not readily available, says Anna Squalala. Squalala, that's an interesting name, a professor of global security and intelligence at Embry-Riddle Aeronautical University. He explains that requests for Social Security number changes are relatively uncommon, with the Social Security Administration typically approving only a small percentage of application due to the strict requirements. The number of applications for Social Security changes tends to fluctuate based on the prevalence of identity theft and other factors affecting personal safety. Five reasons to change your Social Security number. You can't change your Social Security number if you've lost your card or there's no sign of someone else using it. And you can't change it to dodge the law or creditors or to escape the fallout from filing for bankruptcy. But can you change your Social Security number for another reason? Thankfully, you can. There are five main reasons you might want to and be able to change your Social Security number, according to Zulfikar Ramzan, Ph.D., Chief of Consumer Digital Safety and Threat Intelligence at ARA, a company focused on digital security and identity theft prevention. Ongoing identity fraud. If you're dealing with persistent identity theft that's causing major financial headaches, like a family member continually opening new credit cards in your name, you might be able to get a new Social Security number. However, it's not just about being a victim. You need to show that you've tried everything else to fix the problem. Threats to your safety. If someone is using your Social Security number to track you and threaten your safety, such as in cases of stalking or domestic violence, you might qualify for a new number. You need to provide proof, such as a police report, to show that there's a real danger. Religious or cultural reasons. If the numbers in your Social Security number conflict with your personal beliefs or cultural practices, that's interesting, you might be able to request a change. But don't think this is a quick path to a new number. As the Social Security Administration points out, you need to provide written documentation in support of the objection from a religious group with which number holder has established a relationship. Duplicate numbers. In rare cases, the Social Security Agency might accidentally assign you the same number to more than one person. If you find yourself in that situation, you can apply for a new number. Family issues with sequential numbers. If you and a close family member have similar names and Social Security numbers, and if it's causing problems with your legal or tax records, the Social Security Administration might consider giving you or your family a new number. How to change your Social Security number. Have you found yourself in one of the five situations that the SSA considers valid reasons for getting a new Social Security number? Contact your Social Security office. To start the process, reach out to your local Social Security office. You can find the location using the SSA office locator. Explain your situation. A representative of the SSA will likely ask you to fill out Form SS-5, the same form you used when you first applied for your Social Security number and Social Security card. Well, consider lots of times it's a baby. I don't think a lot of people are familiar with that form. Collect proof of your identity. When applying for a new Social Security number, the SSA will require at least two original documents to prove who you are, who you say you are. Photocopies won't do. These need to be either original documents or copies certified by the issuing agency. You'll need documents to confirm both your citizenship, like a U.S. birth certificate or passport, and your identity, like a U.S. driver's license or state ID card. The SSA will accept the following for U.S. citizens, though acceptable documentation varies based upon whether you were born in the United States or abroad. Documents for U.S. citizens. A U.S. birth certificate required if it exists. A U.S. passport. A U.S. driver's license. A state ID card. U.S. hospital record of your birth. Certification of naturalization. Certificate of citizenship. Certificate of report of birth. Consular report of birth abroad. U.S. military identification card. Health insurance card, not Medicare. School identification card. Employee identification card. If your situation involves immigration status or a legal name change, be prepared to provide additional evidence. Documents for non-U.S. citizens. Foreign-born birth certificate, if required, if it exists. Work permit 1-766, permanent resident card 1-551, arrival departure record 1-94, a mission stamp of an unexpired foreign passport. Submit your application. Once you have all your documents together, contact your local SSA office again and let the Social Security representative know you've ready to submit your application. They'll guide you through the next steps and explain what you can expect from the process. Update your bank and creditors. Once you successfully change your Social Security number, it's important to notify your bank and any current creditors as soon as possible, says Michael Ashley, founder of Richiest.com and a veteran of the banking and financial service industries, who did stints at Citibank and Wells Fargo. Start by contacting each institution directly, preferably in writing, and provide them with your new Social Security number, along with any required documentation to verify the change, he advises. This will help ensure that your credit history is updated correctly and there are no interruptions in your accounts and services. It's also a good idea to monitor your credit reports, make sure that change has been properly reflected. What to consider before changing your Social Security number? It's fine to ask yourself, can you change your Social Security number? But don't skip out on an equally important question, should you change your Social Security number? Ramzan suggests everyone consider three factors before trying to change your Social Security number. The impact on your financial records. Changing your Social Security number won't wipe away your money woes, but it could make your financial situation a challenge and complicate your tax records. A new Social Security number won't erase your issues, as the old number will still be linked to your records, says Paige Hansen, a cyber safety and identity theft expert with nearly 20 years of experience at Norton LifeLock. Additionally, starting with a new Social Security number essentially erases your credit history, making it challenging to secure loans, credit cards, or even housing. Employment records, payroll, and Social Security benefits are also tied to your Social Security number, further complicating matters. The necessary updates to your personal identification. You'll need to apply for new identification documents, such as driver's license and passport, to reflect your new Social Security number. This involves filling out additional paperwork and waiting for processing, which can be time-consuming. The potential administrative and legal challenges. The process of getting a new Social Security number requires significant documentation to prove eligibility and may involve lengthy administrative procedures. Additionally, there's a risk of errors or confusion as your records are updated across various institutions. From my experience with identity theft victims, I don't recommend changing your Social Security number, Ms. Sanson. It should only be considered in extreme cases like severe identity theft or domestic violence. In other words, she said, the perceived benefits rarely outweigh the drawbacks. It's not the silver bullet people might think it is, Hansen explains. Instead, I highly recommended considering a credit freeze, enrolling in identity theft protection, and monitoring your credit reports before making such a drastic change. Well, that was convenient. That was exactly 30 minutes. So let's go back to Consumer Reports. And last week we were doing the theme article, which for this week is anti-aging supplements to try, and different supplements that we're talking about. And we left off with vitamin B12, important for nerve health. And I have three selections here, and I'll go to the details. Walgreens vitamin B12, 1,000 micrograms at $19.90 for 300. Wegmans organic vitamin B12, 500 milligrams gummies, $9.99 for 60. And Nature Made vitamin B12, 500 milligrams, $18.39 for 200 count. Why it's important? Vitamin B12, one of eight B vitamins, plays a key role in blood cell formation and nervous system function. Healthy levels of B12 can prevent vitamin deficiency anemia, which can lead to weakness and fatigue, along with nerve damage, memory problems, depression, and heart palpitations. The vitamin is found in animal products such as fish, meat, poultry, and milk. Plant foods, unless they're fortified, don't contain vitamin B12. Who should take it? People who take a B12 supplement include older adults, like me, whose lower gastric acid levels make it harder to absorb the nutrient. Vegetarians or vegans can also be prone to low B12 levels. If you have a medical condition affecting your GI tract, such as inflammatory bowel disease or celiac disease, or if you take a medication that interferes with absorption, such as metformin for diabetes, or a proton pump inhibitor for heartburn, you may also need to supplement. If you present with symptoms of vitamin B12 deficiency, your doctor may test your level. How much do you need? Not a lot. The recommended amount for adults is 2.4 micrograms. Typically, Manza says the amount in a multivitamin is more than enough and may help you save money on an individual supplement. Vitamin D, bone, brain, and immunity booster. And the two shows they show here are Nature's Bounty Vitamin for $14.80 for $150, and Members Mark Sam's Club Vitamin D3, 50 milligram soft gel, $6.98 for $400. Why it's important. Vitamin D helps your body absorb calcium, which is key for remaining bone density. Your body also needs it for healthy neuromuscular and immune function. Getting enough may support brain function and decrease the risk of depression. Low vitamin D has also been linked to insulin resistance and type 2 diabetes. Vitamin D is in fortified milk and breakfast cereals, fatty fish, and egg yolks. Your body can also make vitamin D when you are exposed to the sun, though this process becomes less efficient with age. Nearly a fifth of middle-aged and older adults in the U.S. are vitamin D deficient. Ooh, that's serious. Who should take it? Adults over 75 and those younger than 75 with prediabetes might benefit from supplemental vitamin D, according to Endocrine Society. Although screening for low vitamin D isn't recommended for everyone else, it may be a good idea if you have osteoporosis, other bone problems, or little sun exposure, or if you're concerned you might have very low vitamin D intake in your diet. While some lab tests have suggested wearing sunscreen could interfere with vitamin D production, there's little evidence of this in the real world. How much do you need? Adults up to 70 need 600 international units, 15 micrograms of vitamin D each day, and those 71 and older need 800 IU, 20 milligrams. To prevent toxicity, don't exceed the adult upper limit of 4,000 IU, it's 100 milligrams, micrograms. Talk to your doctor if you have obesity. Vitamin D is fat soluble, so you may require a higher dosage, says Michael F. Hollick, MD, a vitamin D researcher and professor of endocrinology, diabetes, nutrition, and weight management at Boston University School of Medicine. Some D supplements include vitamin K2, which is thought to help with calcium and vitamin D absorption. Hollick says this isn't necessary unless you're deficient in vitamin K. If you eat a healthy diet of full of green leafy veggies, you generate plenty of K in your gut. Most calcium supplements come with vitamin D, which helps your body absorb the bone-building material. So check your supplements and make sure you don't end up taking too much. And last but not least, vitamins. Oh, I'm sorry, it's not last. And three supplements to skip. Okay, this is kind of important. While not everyone needs to take the seven supplements recommended in this article, they can help many of us. The same is not true of these three popular pills. There is either little evidence that they are helpful or very limited situations in which they might be of use. Vitamin C. Vitamin C deficiency is unusual in the U.S. Only about 7% of Americans have it. For the other 93% of us, a vitamin C supplement is simply not worth the money. Research has found that it doesn't reduce the risk of getting a common cold in people who aren't deficient, despite its common use for that. For the few people who don't get enough vitamin C in their diet, it's plentiful in citrus, fruits, peppers, broccoli, potatoes, and more. A regular supplement may shorten the duration of the severity of a cold, though the effect is slight. Smokers may also need supplemental vitamin C. A serious vitamin C deficiency is easy to spot. People often feel so sick with fatigue, aches, and pains that they go to the doctor for testing, says Peter Cohen, MD of Harvard Medical School. Probiotics. There is little research that suggests to take a probiotic supplement is beneficial for the general population, even though it sounds promising in theory. Diverse gut bacteria can help promote health in the GI tract and beyond. But Joanne E. Manson, MD of Brigham and Women's Hospital, says there's not yet enough evidence about the effects of these supplements to make a broad recommendation. Doctors may recommend taking probiotics to help with very specific health situations, such as ulcerative colitis or serious bacterial infection known as Clostridioides difficile C, C. diff, and probiotic supplements that contain live bacteria are being studied for many conditions, including antibiotic-associated diarrhea, eczema, inflammatory bowel disease, and high cholesterol. But most of these cases, you'll need a particular amount and strain to benefit. I wouldn't be using whatever you find on the store shelf, Cohen says. Glucosamine and chondroitin. common to take it together to treat joint pain due to osteoarthritis. Glucosamine and chondroitin are key components of cartilage, which arthritis wears down. A large body of research has found conflicting conclusions about whether these supplements are actually effective. They are known to have a strong placebo effect, so many people who take them experience some relief. But the same is true of people in osteoarthritis studies who were given a placebo pills. So you may want to save your money. Madsen says she doesn't routinely recommend these supplements to patients with arthritis. Instead, consider regular exercise, including gentle activities like Tai Chi or swimming, if the pain is severe, losing excess weight, and occasional use of OTC pain relievers. What about Prevagen? You see ads for this all the time. You've probably seen ads for Prevagen, a supplement with a protein derived from jellyfish, claiming it will improve age-related memory loss. 43% of Americans have heard of it, according to a May 2024 CR nationally representative survey of 2022 U.S. adults. That's what they always use. But the Federal Trade Commission and the state of New York have taken actions against the company, saying research shows the company's product simply does not work. I tell my patients not to take Prevagen, says Matthew Badgett, M.D. of the Cleveland Clinic. To stay sharp, focus instead on the same things that keep your body healthy, like managing diabetes and other diseases, and prioritizing a nutritious diet, regular exercise, and sleep. Now let's switch to a totally different subject. These are the appliances that last. It's not your imagination. Large appliances don't work as long as they used to. If you bought an appliance 30 years ago, it might still be functioning today, says Alice Menken, Associate Director of Appliance Testing at Consumer Reports. But these days, you can expect appliances to last only 10 to 15 years, he says, at least partly because of the changes in the way they're designed and manufactured. An example, my lady friend's washer and dryer both quit. She's had both for 25 years, and they both quit within 3 weeks of each other. Have an older appliance on the fritz? Will help you determine whether or not it's worth fixing. We will also help you narrow down your choices when shopping for a new one, and we'll identify the types of refrigerators, ranges, and so on that our survey shows stand the test of time. Plus, we'll recommend specific appliance models that are highly reliable and shine in CR performance tests. The lifespan of refrigerators. For the longest-lasting refrigerator, your best bet is one with either a top or bottom freezer. CR member survey shows that these are the least likely to have problems. If you really want a French door or side-by-side style, skip models with an ice maker or water ice dispenser. Up to 15% of owners of fridges with that feature had problems with it. Compressors, which are expensive to repair, are much less likely to break, though those in French door fridges may be an exception. Should you repair or replace it? With median repair costs of about $120 to $330, it often makes sense to repair a refrigerator, even one that's 10 years old. The exception are budget top freezers and side-by-sides, because the cost of a new one, $500 to $600 for a top freezer, for example, isn't a lot more than what a repair might be. On the other hand, a malfunctioning 9-year-old French door fridge, but costs $1,200 to replace, is probably worth trying to repair in most instances. Top picks from reliable brand. For a top freezer, the Sangsum RT16A scored a 79, cost $650. The LTG LTC S200 scored a 78, cost $800. And the Whirlpool WRT112, 76 overall, cost $590. For a bottom freezer, they only recommend two. LG LBNC overall score 79, cost $1,300. Fisher & Paykel Active Smart RF170W only scored a 67, but it cost $2,500. For a side-by-side, GE GSE23GG scored a 72, $1,880. And also the GE, a GS225, scored a 71, cost $1,100. French door, GE GE22G $2,050, scored at 80. A Bosch B36FD scored at 74, cost $2,700. And a Whirlpool WRF55555S 72, costs $1,900. Built-in Thermidor T61T, $10,500, scored at 81. Bosch Benchmark B301i, cost $8,000 and scored a 73. Wow, big difference in prices there. Ranges. The problems you might encounter over the years depend on your style of range. For those with gas-fueled appliances, trouble with ignition is the most common, and it's more likely with pro-style bottles than other types of gas ranges. The cooktops of electric smooth-top ranges are more likely to need repair due to chips or scratches. Life expectancy is 11.6 to 14.2 years. And what breaks? Cooking services, gas ignitions, heating elements, and control panels. And I forgot to mention that on refrigerators. The life expectancy of refrigerators is 11.1 to 14 years. And what breaks most are ice makers and water dispensers. Should you repair or replace it? Smaller problems like a broken knob can be fixed for as little as $10 by buying parts at Amazon. But even when you need to call in a pro for a bigger repair, it may be money well spent. According to CR member surveys, any type of range is worth repairing if you own it for 10 years or less. The median repair cost is $165. For pro-style repairs, it's $284. If you're on the fence about repairing or replacing your range, there's an incentive to buy a new one. The Inflation Reduction Act gives consumers until 2032 to take advantage of state-level rebates for ranges, typical up to $840 for the purchase of a new electric range. See rebates in your area. Go to energystar.gov/rebate-finder. The gas. We'll look at some different ranges. For gas, the LG LTG 6093 for $2,600 scored a 79. The GE JBP 735 cost $850 and it scored a 75. Electric Smooth Top, the Refrigerated Gallery GCFE 306 cost $1,100 and scored at 89. The GE Profile PSS 93 cost $1,800 and scored at 88. Electric Induction, the Refrigerated Gallery at $1,400 scored at 92. The LG LSIL at $2,500, scored at 88. The lifespan of dishwashers. How long a dishwasher lasts depends mainly on the reliability of the brand. In CR member surveys, Bosch dishwashers were far less likely than other brands to have water leakage problems or motor malfunctions. Generally, bottles with a stainless steel tub will hold up better over the years. Plastic can stain and crack. Life expectancy is 12 years. What breaks? Control panels, dish racks, Wi-Fi-enabled features, motor and soap dispensers. Should you repair or replace it? Dishwashers have a good track record in our CR member surveys. Most people report at least 10 problem-free years with their machine. When dishwashers do have a problem, the median cost of repair is $138. A dishwasher you bought for less than $700 is worth repairing through its fourth year, according to our data. For those priced $700 to $1,000, through the fifth year, for a high-end dishwasher that could cost you $1,000 or more, it's worth repairing through the sixth year of ownership. One upside to replacing a dishwasher? Increased water and energy efficiency. New models use as little as 3 gallons to wash a load of dishes. Many models with no more than 13 cents worth of electricity per cycle. The Boss 500 series cost $1,150, scored a 79. The Boss 800 series cost $1,350 and also scored a 79. The meal at GS 5056 at $1,500 scored a 65. The lifespan of washing machines. You can count on a washer to last about a decade longer, but front loaders are more prone to developing mildew and mold, and top loaders are more likely to tangle up your clothes. About laundry appliances, LG earns top marks for reliability most frequency. Life expectancy is 9 to 12 years. What breaks? The drum, controls, and pump. Should you repair or replace it? Washers are workhorses that rarely break down. Consider repairing yours regardless of what it costs, when new, unless it's reaching the end of its expected life. Our 2023 member survey found that the medium out-of-pocket washer repair costs from $120 to $230, depending on the type of washer and what the problem was. Top picks from reliable brands. The top loader, the LG WT7150 at 950, scored at 85. The LG WT7400 scored at 80, cost $1,150. And the Speed Queen TC503 cost $1,330. It scored at 64. Front loader, the LG WM8900, $1,500, scored at 89. The Electrolux ELF W76 at 1350 scored an 81. The Samsung FlexWash WV60A at $1,800 also scored an 81. The lifespan of dryers. Clothes dryers usually have few problems. There's evidence from CR members that 92% of dryers that they purchased in 2013 or after are still in use, but the most common complaint about clothes not being fully dried. 12% of those for surveys said this was the case with their machine. The life expectancy is 13 and a half years. What breaks? The drum, the vent, and the heating element. Should you repair or replace it? Gas dryer repairs from $133 to $190, while electric dryers range from $125 to $192, so almost the same. If you paid less than $900 for an electric dryer, it makes sense to repair it through year five. If it costs over $900 when new, that time frame increases to 8 years. The median cost of replacing a full-time electric dryer ranges from $571 on the low end to $1,063 on the high end. Top picks, the gas, the LG DLG X550, $1,300 to $485. Speed Queen, DF7004 at $2,400, scored a 74. And the Maytag MGD 6500 at $1,250, scored a 66. Electric, the LG DLEX 7900 at $1,350, scored at 87. The Amana NED 5800 at $950, scored at 75. And the Whirlpool WED 9620 at $1,500, scored at 74. Are smart appliances easier to fix? When something goes wrong, smart appliances, those with internet connectivity, can often be repaired faster and with fewer service calls. That's because smart appliances, such as those made by GE at Kenmore, may have remote diagnostic capabilities that allow the manufacturer's repair service to connect to the appliance over the internet to figure out what's wrong. If they see that particular part needs to be replaced, for example, they can order and make sure the service technician has it on hand the very first time they visit. Even if you're not comfortable connecting your smart appliance to the internet, it can store diagnostic, and other data that a manufacturer's service technician can access via a port when they come to your home, helping them diagnose the problem faster. Independent repair technicians don't have remote diagnostic capabilities, but they might be able to access the data stored in your appliance. For example, GE sells diagnostic tools to both authorized and non-authorized third-party repair shops. When choosing an independent shop, ask it if it has access to these tools. This won't cut down on repeat visit, but it can help the technician figure out what's gone awry more quickly. Well, another complete change of pace. Yogurt, CR's new guide. Beyond traditional Greek, there's skyr and kefir, yogurts made from cashew milk, oat milk, coconut milk, and more. Which are the healthiest and taste great, too? And they have pictures here of seven different types. The Wee by Yoplait, whole milk, French-style fruit on the bottom, strawberry. Bellwether Farms A2 Organic Whole Milk Yogurt, Whole Milk Strawberry. Go Organic Forager Project Dairy Free Cashew Milk Organic Strawberry. Organic Non Fat Sky Strawberry and Rhubarb. Harmless Harvest, crafted from hand scooped coconut meat. Harmless Harvest Organic Cultured Coconut Strawberry. Icelandic Provisions Low Fat Skyr Strawberry and Lingonberry. And last but not least, Phage, best self lactose-free, reduced-fat Greek strawberry. Few foods are as healthy and versatile as yogurt. It's great for breakfast or dessert, or as in a snack in smoothies, and even, in the case of plain yogurt, as a condiment, say a topping for baked potatoes or a substitute for mayonnaise. But the yogurt aisle has become a complicated place to shop today, with so many new kinds out there. Do you want Greek or Icelandic? Dairy or oat or almond? Is it better to go with a non-fat, low-fat yogurt rather than a whole milk version? One thing is clear. Many yogurts are packed with protein, calcium, potassium, and most important, live active cultures and probiotics. These healthy bacteria are what ferment the milk to turn it into yogurt and make it easier for the body to absorb protein and calcium. They have other benefits, too, such as supporting gastrointestinal health and helping to control blood pressure and cholesterol. These bacteria may also tamp down chronic inflammation, which causes cell damage and is thought to be at the root of many illnesses, including Alzheimer's disease, type 2 diabetes, and cancer. Any type of plain yogurt with live active cultures is a good choice and offers these benefits. Many people prefer flavored yogurt, says Amy Keaton, RD, a CR nutritionist. That's where you have to choose carefully, because the ingredients and the nutritional content can vary considerably from brand to brand. Some have a lot of added sugars or other ingredients you may not want. To help with that, we recently tested 32 strawberry yogurts, the most popular flavor in the U.S., and included dairy and plant milk ones, Greek, Icelandic, French, and traditional styles, and yogurts with different fat levels. Keating rated each one for nutrition, and a panel of professional tasters rated them for taste. The good news is that we found 12 to recommend, and at least one of every yogurt type got top marks for taste, nutrition, or both. In addition, this guide explains the differences between the various yogurt types and styles. We will also tell you to watch out for on labels so that you make healthy choices no matter which flavors you enjoy. We may not get through this whole thing, but we'll try. Low-fat, non-fat, and whole milk. Which should you choose? The three tops vary not just in fat levels, but also in other nutrients as well as in texture and flavor. In general, whole milk yogurt has a few more calories and is higher in fat and saturated fat than low-fat and non-fat yogurts. It's also lower in protein and calcium. For example, a cup of traditional whole milk plain yogurt has about 8 grams of protein and 300 milligrams of calcium versus about 11 grams of protein and 400 milligrams of calcium in a cup of traditional plain non-fat. A majority of the fat in whole milk yogurt is saturated, which experts caution against overconsuming. But some research suggests that dairy fat might not have the same artery clogging effect as the saturated fat in red meat, processed meat, and some baked goods. While it still may be important to keep your overall saturated fat intake in check, there's little difference in the way non-fat, low-fat, or whole milk yogurts affect your risk of chronic diseases, says Mark Haub, PhD, a professor of food and health sciences at Kansas State University in Manhattan. So it's fine to choose the type you like best from the following. Whole milk. Whole milk yogurt has a creamy, velvety texture because of the full fat milk it's made from. It also has the most saturated fat, about 5 grams per cup for plain yogurt. In our test of all the whole milk strawberry yogurts, rated highly for taste, but some people might find the whole milk yogurt too rich for their liking. Low-fat yogurt falls in between whole milk and non-fat versions in terms of texture and nutrition. Plain low-fat yogurt will usually have half the saturated fat of whole milk yogurt. The amount of protein is about 30% higher, while calcium levels are about 35% higher. Non-fat yogurt has a thinner texture and may be slightly watery, although Greek and Icelandic versions can still be pretty thick. Plain non-fat yogurt can taste more tart than whole milk ones. Non-fat traditional has about 30% more protein and 40% more calcium than traditional whole milk yogurt. Dairy yogurt. Traditional yogurt was for many years the only type on the market in the U.S. Even today, if a yogurt label doesn't specify otherwise, this is probably what you're getting. Traditional or unstrained yogurt is creamy and has a looser texture than some other types. It comes in non-fat, low-fat, and whole milk forms. And in general, the higher the fat content, the creamier the yogurt. It has about half the protein of Greek or Icelandic variants, but is highest in calcium. Greek is notably thicker than traditional styles because it's strained to remove the liquid whey, a protein in milk. Whole milk versions are quite dense, but even a non-fat Greek yogurt can be thick and firm. It also tends to have a tangier flavor than traditional yogurt, especially the plain varieties. The higher concentration of milk solids means that Greek yogurt has about twice the protein, but it also has more calories than a traditional yogurt with the same fat level. The biggest difference between whole milk yogurts, plain Greek has about 215 calories per cup, and plain traditional has about 150 calories. And Greek has less calcium, for instance, low-fat traditional plain yogurt has about 300 milligrams per cup, while low-fat Greek has about 265 milligrams. Icelandic, also known as Skyr, S-K-Y-R, ferments longer than other types and is strained several times. It's generally thicker than Greek yogurt and tangier tasting, too. Though it varies by brand, Icelandic yogurt tends to have a slightly more protein than Greek yogurt, but less calcium than traditional yogurt. Like traditional and Greek yogurt, it comes in non-fat, low-fat, and whole milk forms. French. Most yogurts are produced in huge vats and then put in individual containers for sale. French yogurt is pot set, which means it's made and sold in individual glass or clay jars. It's on the denser, creamier side for an unstrained yogurt because it's typically made with whole milk. French-style yogurt is similar to traditional whole milk yogurt in calories, saturated fat, protein, and calcium. Plain French tends to taste less sweet than other styles. Plant milk yogurt, almond or cashew milk. Like dairy yogurt, these contain live active cultures and probiotics. They're also low in saturated fat. Protein in the ones in our test range from 3 to 5 grams per container. The dairy yogurts we tested had 4 to 15 grams. Nut milk yogurts have more of the protein than may contain isolated sources of protein, such as soy protein. These may not be as good for you as the protein naturally in foods. Nut milks have little natural calcium, so you want to look for a yogurt that's fortified with a mineral. Even so, they're not necessarily brimming with calcium. Those in our test had 2 to 10% of the daily value, while dairy milk yogurts had 10 to 20%. Coconut milk has the creamiest texture of plant milk yogurts. It contains live active cultures, but little calcium or protein unless they're added, and often significantly more saturated fat than whole milk, dairy, or other plant milk yogurts. You may have heard that coconut saturated fat doesn't increase cholesterol, but a 2020 analysis of 16 studies published in the journal Circulation found that coconut oil raised LDL, bad cholesterol, by more than 10 points. Oat milk. The slightly sweet taste of oat milk sometimes comes through in yogurts made from it. They contain good-for-you live cultures, and some have added protein. Like other plant milk yogurts, they're low in calcium unless the mineral is added. And we have two more things that I'll do next week, when yogurt goes wrong, and what about yogurt drinks? A couple of quick jokes to close out. A man walks into a bar with a chicken pot pie on his head. The bartender asks, "Why are you wearing a chicken pot pie on your head?" The man replies, "It's an old family tradition. We always wear chicken pot pies on our head on Tuesday." "Today's Wednesday," said the bartender. "Oh dear," says the man, "I must look like a real fool." The doorbell ringing at 2 a.m. wakes a couple from a sound sleep. The husband runs downstairs, throws open the door, and finds a guy standing in the pouring rain. "I need a push," the guy says. The husband slams the door and storms back to bed. "Who was that?" asks his wife. "Some guy wanting a push." "Honey is in trouble. Help the man." Feeling bad, the husband goes downstairs, opens the front doors, and shouts, "Hey, pal, where are you?" "I'm on the swing," the guy shouts back. And with that, we've about run out of time for today's episode of Reader's Digest and Consumer Reports. Be sure to listen in next time. The content of this program is intended for people who are blind and print impaired. This broadcast is readily available as a podcast at our website, ncreadingservice.org. If you have any comments or questions, please call us at 919-832-5138. Thanks for listening.